From the studios of KUSP in Santa Cruz, California, I'm Gary Shapiro, and this is From the Bookshelf. Rachel Kushner is my guest. Her first novel, Telex from Cuba, was a finalist for the 2008 National Book Award, and her latest novel, The Flamethrowers, was a 2013 National Book Award finalist. In other words, she is good. Rachel Kushner, welcome to From the Bookshelf.
Thank you for having me on the show.
Well, I have a feeling, and maybe I'm wrong, correct me if I'm wrong, but I have a feeling you probably don't really like to explain yourself or to explain your work.
Well, I think that what I like most is to write fiction. And, you know, once the long project of putting a novel together is done, the most eloquent thing I could say about the book is the product of the book itself. So, but you know, I think all writers probably feel that way to one degree or another. Nonetheless, many, if not most of us, do make our appearances and try to be gracious and explain things so people have questions.
Well, and you're very gracious on this show. But I guess that's, you know, it must be like the hardest part for you, because now you're done with the book and you're probably writing your next book now.
I'm trying to, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't know. It's I often wonder how other writers feel. I mean, I'm sure, you know, there's a whole range and spectrum of how people handle what I call the author part as opposed to the writer part. I much prefer to be a writer to being an author. Writing is it's a private activity, and I don't think anything really within it can prepare you for having a public persona as well. I think people move into that, you know, in different ways. I mean, some people are more comfortable with it and others less. I mean, I'll be honest, it's not my favorite thing in the world.
You don't see yourself, like, in the era of The Flamethrowers. I remember Jacqueline Suzanne would be on The Tonight Show talking about Valley of the Dolls. That's not you.
Well, I'm sure my publisher would love for me to go on a television show and talk about Flamethrowers, and I do my part to try to help them, because it's a relationship, and, you know, publishers put a lot of faith in authors, and I have a great publisher, and everybody who works there works very hard on my book. So once you've been through this a couple of times, you come to understand that it's not just about you. Other people are invested in the book, and it takes a lot of people to keep books alive and viable, you know. That said, I mean, once I finish writing a book, not that I've been doing this for a long time, I'm only in my third novel, but the pattern thus far is that once I finish, I'm eager to move on and start a new project, and then I live in the world of that project, and whatever I'm thinking about in terms of the novel that I'm trying to write and put together, my experience is totally filtered by that, and so I've sort of left the other thing behind.
Are there novels before Telex from Cuba that are sitting in your drawer that you never published?
No.
So you actually have published both novels that you've written.
Yeah. The first novel took me a long time to write, and I was a little older. It's not like a novel that a person would, you know, some people write amazing novels in their 20s, but it kind of the typical classical form is to write a novel that's based on your own life first. But I didn't do that. I wrote a novel that was a whole world that was not attached to me really in any biographical way in terms of my own personal experience. Not that that rendered it less likely to languish in a drawer, but it took me a long time to do, and I was in my later 30s when it was published. So I'm glad that it saw the light of day, I guess.
And I can imagine that when you do your book tours that people have a lot of questions. So somebody was talking to me, asking me about Telex from Cuba, and asked at the time, said, what's that book like? And I said, it's like a big jigsaw puzzle that when you get it together, it's a cool picture, but some of the pieces are missing.
But some of the pieces are missing. But is that like a good thing or a flawed thing?
I think it's a good thing. I mean, I think it's, And it was interesting that you set your next book in the 70s, because that was an era in which people made movies like, say, Five Easy Pieces, in which...
Yeah, that's a great movie.
Yeah, in which they didn't just absolutely tell you absolutely everything. A lot of the novelists that I've talked to have been very concerned about plotting, and how will they plot their novel? They have to go back and replot it. But it seems to me that although your book is really... both your books are really rich in character and setting, that plot doesn't seem to be a huge concern to you.
I guess that's true. I don't want to turn readers off who are listening to the show.
Oh, I hope they won't be, because they're both fantastic books and everybody should read them.
But, no, a few different things I could say. First of all, yeah, I love Five Easy Pieces, and there's actually a reference to it in The Flamethrowers. And I did think a lot about movies from the 1970s, because I think it's a great decade for film. And I think about cinematic narrative when I'm writing, because I do prefer to watch a movie where not everything is spelled out for me, and even the movie can end on a pretty ambiguous note of things not all coming together into, you know, a symphonic moment when everything is clear, or at least everything kind of matches up. And I guess I feel the same way as a reader. I can admire greatly a kind of classically put together 19th century novel where everything makes a whole, but I don't seem to ever think about those novels again, really.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the register of entertainment in my brain is, I'm less disturbed by that, and I want to be a little bit disturbed or to have to do some kind of work, and so maybe I write that way too. I'm not over invested in plot, but I like to have some structure. I find that it buys the writer space and moments in which to be more playful. Like, a little plot can go a pretty long way.
We're talking with Rachel Kushner, and her latest book is The Flamethrowers. And if you haven't read it yet, what the hell? Get on it. It's in paperback now. Well, it's interesting that you talked about cinematic. I was reading the review that Dwight Garner wrote in the New York Times about when he loves your book, and he's immediately, like in the first line, he referred to it as a movie in IMAX. Or there was a kind of a cinematic reference. But as I was reading your book, I was thinking it's really pure literature. It wouldn't really be a film.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. And it's nice that he said that. I mean, I think he meant just to say that it felt vivid to him.
Mm-hmm. And is where did the Flamethrowers come from?
You mean the title?
No, I mean the book. Where?
Oh, sorry.
I mean, it came from your head, but where exactly?
Oh, where exactly? I mean, that's sort of a hard question.
It is. I mean, there's a lot of people telling stories. There's a lot of things that you want to talk about. What are those things that you want to talk about?
Well, I hate to be obnoxiously tautological, but they are the things that are in the book. I think that I, with my second novel, I decided early on that I wanted it to be a book. If this category comes through and can make sense to another person, I wanted it to be a book that allowed for lots and lots of spaces in which to play out, like, my own sensibilities about various things and opinions about the world. And I guess, you know, a lot of the characters are... they're not stand-ins for me, but I stand by each one of them. I'm no more one character in the book, for instance, the narrator, who's a female, than I am any of the other characters. And I guess it was just sort of my run with dialogue to some degree. And there's certain kind of formal qualities to that book that have to do with its coming into being, because I was thinking a lot about what kind of novelist I am. I mean, I guess I'm always thinking about that, but it was, this is only my second book, and I didn't want to make any compromises to anyone else's idea of what the novel should be. And so I guess it was kind of my play for that. I mean, it's just a very personal book on some level for these reasons that I'm having trouble describing.
So when each, there's sort of some monologues in the book. So you're kind of an actress, back to the cinematic idea, that you're playing these parts, kind of.
Well, not really, because, I mean, I'm a terrible actress, and I have no desire to be in public in that kind of way. It's sort of different. I don't know. I mean, there is something. It's probably annoying to hear authors say that, you know, a voice just comes to them or they're in a trance when they're writing. But there is something to that. I mean, I'm a kind of believer in the operations of the unconscious. And when you're writing, when you really hit a vein, it's like that. It's like things come up and they take place in an order that seems to flow. And it has its own internal logic. And you don't have to force it. And you're not thinking consciously, okay, this is what happens next. This is what that person's going to say. Yeah, that would be good. That would produce X effect on the reader.
Mm-hmm.
You're in some deep space. And then you step back and you read it. And then that's when, you know, you try to rein it in or tone it down or make sure that it's not too long. But it's the surprises in the day, really, that make writing, for me, purposeful. Because I want it to reflect a version of myself that I can't conjure in any given hour of a day.
So when the characters are speaking, you're surprised to hear what they say?
Well, it's not exactly like that, because I'm. It's happening as I'm writing, but it's like thinking is happening on a deep level of concentration, and it's happening in real time. So it's like anything deliberate is going to be a little more inert as a piece of creative work. And when you're writing, sometimes you're just open to something much deeper and more inspired.
So like painting. Do you paint also?
No, I don't. I don't do anything but
write.
Write.
And when you're writing, do you revise a lot, or is it just that's as is?
I do revise. I revise while I'm writing too. I spend a lot of time, you know, kind of fussing over each sentence sometimes. But different parts of a novel for me need different amounts of revision. Some things need a few things. need very little revision, and some things need a merciless amount, just because I haven't gotten the tone right yet, maybe.
When you said that you didn't want to make any compromises with the flamethrowers, were there people trying to make you compromise? Were the editor saying, can you put a murder in there, Rachel?
No, actually, I'm glad you asked, because I would never want to give that impression. I believe that with most writers, no one is asking them to compromise. The worst compromises, maybe, are the compromises that writers would make themselves.
Losing confidence in their direction or something?
Like an interior pressure to conform to a standard that you have internalized long ago, you know, without having the defenses to reject what isn't right for you. Because it's, you know, when you're young, you want to be open and a quick study, and one reads a lot of books. But then when you get older, you know, there is some Oedipal relation, I think, in the creation of literature. Like, the break might be essential, but, you know, you have to be good enough to make it, first of all. And secondly, you have to not kind of be accidentally, you know, writing like John Steinbeck or something, which is, I throw that out there because he's just a writer that I read a lot, very young, you know, like fourth and fifth grade, and an interesting writer. But at this point in my life, I think it's important to sort of be vigilant with your adult conceptions of what art and creativity are, and not conforming to a convention that you don't believe in generally, just because in the moment one is swayed by it, or it's an easier way out sometimes.
Do you, when you're working on a book, Do you limit your exposure to other literature? Because you're like an editor, right? You have to read other people's stuff all the time.
No, I don't read anyone else. I mean, what do you mean like an editor?
Don't you have like a journal that you work on or that you...
No,
oh.
I don't.
No. I don't know what I'm talking about there.
Well, I think I know what you're saying. I was, in my 20s, I was an editor in New York City at a magazine called Bomb.
Oh, uh-huh. You don't do that
Bomb
anymore.
Magazine.
That was a long time ago.
No, I quit that job in 2003, so 11 years ago. And since then, I've written two novels, and I wrote them just working freelance. I would write about art, so I haven't worked as an editor in many, many years. And I had a little journal for a little while that I was part of, with some other people who started it, called Soft Targets. And we just put out two issues, but that was also a very long time ago. And I wasn't really doing the... I guess I was doing some of the editing, but no, I mostly just read to read. But back to your original question, you said...
Do you avoid...
Why?
Yeah, when you're working, do you avoid other writers because you don't want to be influenced by them, or...
I do not do that. I've heard people say that. Or actually, I don't know if I've heard people say that, but I've been asked that question a bunch, and so I presume that this is somebody's rule. No, I read all kinds of things every day, and sometimes I find that, like, reading a little bit of somebody, like getting a hit on of some writer who is interesting stylistically or, you know, has like an amazing prologue or, you know, whatever, like read like the Molly Bloom section of Ulysses or something like that, can kind of break things up or, you know, make things fresh again. I find reading to be so useful, but I guess I love to assimilate in a way that will be unrecognizable. Like, I'm always sort of surfing off other literature and importing little codes and things that only I ultimately probably will recognize, and they don't need to be recognized because they're just there to kind of move me along. So, you know, reading is hugely important. I don't turn myself off to it.
We're talking with Rachel Kushner, and she is the author of two novels, Telex from Cuba and The Flamethrowers, both finalists for the National Book Award. That must have been a big deal, exciting.
Yeah, it was exciting. It was, you know, it was fortunate. I mean, it felt kind of like luck to the second time in a row, because there were so many amazing books that came out this year. And on some level, at a certain point, I think, you know, you can't believe too much in your own greatness for getting nominated, because there's, you know, these things are subjective. But it was a terrific honor.
Do they have like an Oscar night dinner where you sit there and they say the nominees are?
They absolutely have that. They have, yeah, it's like literature's version of the Oscars, which, as a friend of mine who's also been nominated likes to joke, it's like the writer's night. So, you know, people are wearing kind of funny outfits. Their glasses are askew. It's not a, it's not Hollywood level glamour, but it's a little funny. I mean, there's a red carpet, there are photographers. It's strange. I think it's as close as the literary world comes to having some kind of glamour. I mean, not that event per se, but those kinds of events.
Yeah. Well, do you think you'll be writing a lot of novels in your career? I mean, you've written in these two. Do you have like 100 novels rattling around your head, and it's just a matter of time before you get them out, or are you only going to write 5 novels? What do you think?
Well, I mean, you're summoning me to confront my mortality by asking me that question.
assuming that mortality is not an issue.
Already. No, I've already done the math. I mean, it just depends on how well the brain holds up in, you know, the later years, when one is closer to the horse's head, as they put it. It takes me a long time to write each book. I'm guessing that if one writes a book every 5 years, which is, I think, a reasonable average, I probably only have 5 books left, tops.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, definitely plan to write them.
Yeah. But you don't, you know, what about those authors that, you know, that churn them out. They can just do it like that. What do you think about that?
Well, can you give an example of who you're thinking of? I mean, there's so many different kinds of writers.
Well, that's true. But, I mean, there's nobody like Rachel Kushner, so I can't compare.
Oh.
But flattery
will get you so far.
But, you know, I mean,
well, how about,
Steinbeck
I
wrote quite a few novels, for instance.
He did, yeah. And, like, I always think about, for some reason, the career of Don DeLillo is really interesting.
Yeah, he's got a lot of
books. He's a writer I admire
Russell
greatly.
Russell Banks, he's got a few.
Well, DeLillo's output has changed. It has ebbs and flows. But he started kind of late, mm-hmm. maybe not quite as late as I did, but almost. And then for a decade, from 1970 to 1980, he wrote 10 books in 10 years.
Wow.
They're smaller novels. You know, some of them are only 160 pages. But it was like he had just had this fast-paced thing, and he had to do each one. And then he started writing bigger, longer books, and, of course, culminating in Underworld, which is a very long book. And since then, he's only written shorter things. And, you know, everybody's different. It would be interesting to fall into a phase where I wrote one really terrifically long book. For some reason, I don't know if that's in my future or not. I seem to write about a 300 or 400-page novel, and it takes me a long time to do it, but I'd be open to, you know, a flash of inspiration and happened more quickly. I'm definitely working all the time, either way.
Well, Flamethrowers, did you feel like Flamethrowers, I mean, obviously you didn't feel this way because you published Flamethrowers as is, but it could have gone on another, it could have, you know, couldn't it?
Yeah, I think it could have, actually. I sort of wanted to sew it up and be done with it, and I felt like I got to a good end point. I mean, maybe in a way it's best for a book to be as short as it can.
Mm-hmm.
And just because one can make something longer doesn't mean it should or needs to be longer. And there wasn't anything in the book that I felt it could do without, you know, for my own totally subjective reasons. But it was to a point where I felt like it had, you know, it could come to an end, which for me means it should, because
uh-huh.
I don't, something to do with economy.
Well, so do you say, I'm done, or do you say, I think I'm done?
I say, I'm done.
Mm-hmm.
I knew how I wanted the book. When I was about 2/3 of the way through, I started to get a feeling of what the ending was going to look like. Like, I knew what the sort of tone, you know, the kind of ambient and emotional register of the ending would be. And then when I was about 3/4 of the way through the book, I saw the whole scene of how it was going to end. And it was just a matter of getting there. And so once I was there, I was there.
Mm-hmm. Well, you talked about some of the books that influenced you or that you've read. What other popular culture things influence you? What music do you listen to? What do you watch television? What?
No, I don't watch television. I don't even have a television. And I just
they're very popular now.
Yeah. Oh, people keep, you know, they say that the Wire is really great and this and that. And
the Beverly Hillbillies is good.
I'm sorry?
The Beverly Hillbillies is good. I watch that all the time.
The Beverly Hillbillies?
Yeah, have you ever seen
you're
that?
You're really with the modern world. I have seen it. I mean, that is about as recent as my TV watching goes, the original airings of the Beverly Hillbillies. I saw some TV as a kid, but I just, I don't know, I'm going to copy DeLillo here. He says that he's not interested in the serial form, and there is something to that, I think. When I've seen TV more recently, I think about it and analyze it and obsess over it as if it had depth. And it mostly, in fact, maybe exclusively, does not have the kind of depth that film has. So film is a huge inspiration for me. I watch lots of films. And, you know, I like, I guess, a certain kind of art film, like structural films in the 70s and 80s, certain kind of great, more avant-garde filmmakers. I go to a lot of museums. I like to look at art, and not just for Flamethrowers, which was about the art world,
yeah.
But just in a general way, I like what it does to my mind, and I like to go to galleries and see what contemporary artists are doing. And yeah, I listen to music, but somehow music doesn't it doesn't, it can inspire me in a moment to sort of sustain or guide me to the right register when I'm writing. I don't listen while I'm writing, but I'll take a break and listen to music. But it doesn't quite have the same effect on me as narrative forms for writing. Like, film is important and reading is important. And also, just so corny to say, but being with my friends and being on the street and looking at people and listening to how they talk, I know that's not very highbrow or intellectual, but also I have a lot of different kinds of friends, and I'm rich in that. I know a lot of really amazing people, and they say things that are so funny and smart, and then they know that I'm just plundering left and right.
So some of the things that people say in your books are things that people have said to you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A few things, yeah.
Yeah. And do you ever have the occasion where you go, you know, I could have said this, it would have been really great, and so therefore you have one of your characters say it?
Meaning I invent it as if I were to say it?
Yeah. Gee, if only
I think everything is kind of back to the dialogue question with that. I mean, in a way, yes, but in a sense, I mean, it's corny to say this. It doesn't sound that believable, but it's true. When I'm writing in the book, it's like I'm saying it then.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need to have said it as me, as the person, you know, the identity that's been built by me and by the world, you know, my relation to it and who I am as a social being. It's something else. Like, you get to inhabit these other characters in the book and speak things from these different perspectives and cross gender lines and, you know, be, you know, just all come from different kinds of perspectives. But I guess, yeah, there are moments in the book when it's fun to be clever. But in real life, really, I'm not, you know, I'm not trying to be the wittiest person in the room. That, I mean, that gets tiresome sometimes.
My guest is Rachel Kushner. Her books, Telex from Cuba and The Flamethrowers, are both fantastic. And Rachel, thank you so much for spending some time with us on From the Bookshelf.
Oh, thanks for having me on your show out there in Santa Cruz, where it's a lot warmer than where I am.
Well, that's all the time we have for this week's From the Bookshelf. I hope you had a good time, and we'll come back and see us again next week. In the meantime, check out our podcast page at fromthebookshelf.com. You can also find us on Facebook, and you can subscribe to our podcast at iTunes. I want to thank Rachel Kushner for being on the show, her novels, Telex from Cuba, and The Flamethrowers. From the Bookshelf is produced by Francis Venegas. I'm Gary Shapiro. Good night, everybody.